Hello, Faisal.
Hey, what's up? What's up?
What's up?
How's my audio? Is it
It's
okay?
very good,
Is
actually.
the fan in the
You sound
background?
very
Okay, cool,
crisp.
cool, cool. Awesome.
I feel like every time I come onto Clubhouse, it's like slightly changed.
Yeah, like there's so many updates. Changing a lot of things. Hey,
I
Moritz,
forget.
what's up?
Roots. Hello. Hello. You're on mute if you can't hear us.
I can hear you. Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. How's it going? Very well. And as you can see,
Welcome.
Thomas, my co-founder, is in the audience.
Oh, Thomas. So we would you like to join, Thomas? We'll send a request. We'll send a request. What's up, Guillaume?
Hey, hi everyone.
We are back on Clubhouse
Hey,
after
Guillaume.
a little break since we've been doing our grass up a masterclass. So yeah, we've been a few weeks away from Clubhouse, but we're excited to be back today, and we're hitting the ground running. I think after our theme of talking to the people that actually develop the software and the tools that we use, we had the Rhino guys on a few weeks ago. And yeah, I've been interested to have this talk on Enscape. So welcome everyone to Architect number 37. Let's talk Enscape with co-founder Moritz Luck. And then we also have the other co-founder, Thomas Wilberger. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I'm terrible at pronunciation. So yeah, we've got two for one here out of nowhere. So we're excited. So thank you, Moritz and Thomas, for joining. And yeah, welcome to Clubhouse as well, because Moritz has the new the Clubhouse badge. So yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, I'm interested to have you guys on, and we'll hopefully cover some ground. So yeah, maybe to give you guys maybe a little bit of introduction to yourself, Moritz and Thomas. Like, I was going to give you a bit of a background, but since you're both here, Moritz, you're a bit of a kind of you have quite an interesting background of a bit of a, or you both are kind of entrepreneur and also like have a connection to the AEC space. Moritz, I think you studied as an engineer. Am I correct?
Well, I studied as an engineer, but not with architecture. I studied as an industrial engineer. And so the closest I get to architecture was because my wife's and
Oh,
works in that
that's
space.
interesting.
But yeah, neither Thomas nor I have a real architecture background. But yeah, we have founded a company together before we founded Enscape. And so yeah, this was maybe that's what you refer to as being quite interesting. Plus now we also have our little endeavors that are after our career at
True,
Enscape.
would you call yourselves maybe archipreneurs, or you've kind of ventured around in different industries, right? But
Oh, but
maybe we'll
archipreneur is certainly a super cool term. I want to be called an archipreneur.
yeah, I think it seems to be like Marmite. People either love the term or they hate it. But
Count me in on loving it.
there you go. So yeah, actually, Thomas, do you want to give us a little bit of a bit on your background as well, and what you studied and
Yeah,
that sort
sure.
of thing?
So, the first time, I mean, yeah, the first time I saw that you can program a computer immediately catched me. And in the meantime, I studied mechanical engineering, but I still went back to computer programming because I found it much more interesting than mechanical engineering. Once you know how a car works, I think you're done with mechanical engineering. At least that was true for my part. On the other hand, I also found 3D rendering, 3D computer graphics, very interesting. And this intersection of technology and art, this immediately caught my attention. So that's why I became interested in the architecture industry.
Yeah, interesting. We'll get to how you guys got to Enscape, but Moritz, I know we kind of just touched on this. I love the avatar. What happened to this Inkscape superhero that you are in your profile? You said his name is Photon?
Dr. Photon.
Dr. Photon.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And it's a sad story because Dr. Photon is retired now.
Yeah. He retired after the merger as well. He's living on a beach somewhere.
Yes, he's living on a beach with his wife, Ray Tracy, and his little kid. And his life. But unfortunately, he doesn't work for Enscape no more.
Yeah, so he's available to hire, is he? So you could turn him into an NFT. That would be quite a cool little NFT to have, Dr. Photon.
Oh, yes, but you see, now we can even use it without it being an NFT. It doesn't have to be an NFT for me to work as an avatar.
And there's still an active rumor that Dr. Photon has been modeled after Moritz's face and body shape. I don't want to comment this rumor, but the rumor is still around.
I like it. I'll continue to spread that rumor.
Yeah, please do that.
Back in the day, yes.
That's awesome.
Before becoming a father, yes.
Yeah, but actually the backstory of Dr. Photon is that we wanted to give Enscape a face, because usually if you only advertise with architecture images and so on, I mean, you of course you have usually people walking around in the architecture renderings, but it's a bit soulless. So we wanted to give the web page and our communication a bit of a face, and we figured out that a cartoon character would be more beautiful than maybe a photo of whoever. So we chose Dr. Photon.
You should have it as like a Easter egg in the library of people, and then you can just like see how many different architects like put the Easter egg of Dr. Photon and this character like in different buildings. That'd be quite a cool little Easter egg you guys should add.
That's a great idea. We should tell that to the guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely sneak him in there a few times. And his wife, Victoria V-Ray? Ray Tracy. Ray Tracy. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very controversial guy, to say the least. I think half of the architects loved him, the other ones didn't. And so we were never sure. But looking back, he worked well for us, even though some people said he's not serious enough. But yeah, nice looking back.
Yeah, he's good. So, I mean, maybe it'd be great to hear like the build up and story of how you got to, you know, thinking about starting Enscape and how Enscape brought up, and I guess how you guys kind of met and know each other and decided to do this together. Because I think that's also an interesting part of any like co-founding and startup is like how you guys actually kind of connect with other people that are interested in this kind of stuff and create a new company. So give us a little story of meeting and how Enscape evolved from there.
So basically it all started in Karlsruhe, where we both studied at the time, and we met in our dorm. So we kind of liked each other. We both had the idea that we wanted to found a company, which we then did with the first little project, and then we founded another company together, which was called INRI. And out of that, being in the space of architecture, looking at things, we then saw that with architects, there was this gap in the market where no one did what Enscape did. Everyone wanted to do renderings, but it took quite a while. And then it also didn't look good, which I saw from my friends. When you looked at video games, they looked so nice, and then you looked at the renderings from the architects, which kind of didn't, and then they took forever. And so we saw this gap in the market, and that's how we got the idea, because we were in this space, we knew what's possible, and then we were wondering, why isn't no one doing that? And that's how the idea started. back in 2013 when we started it as a project within this company.
Yeah, is this as InReal? Did it start as InReal and then you know change to Enscape, or what was kind of InReal to like that was the first kind of test in this space kind of thing?
Exactly. So InReal started out as being a VR company. Even before VR was a thing, InReal started out as a VR company. And we also did architectural visualizations as a service, you know, as kind of an agency, right, also with VR. So where you would use a game engine. But then we realized that for architects, this isn't great. Architects want to first do the renderings themselves and be a lot quicker than having to wait for 2 weeks yeah. until it's done. And by that time in your architectural project, you're a lot further ahead. And so it didn't really quite fit. And so there were two things apparent, that it needs to be immediate. So, you need to get the result quite there. And the quality also needs to be decent enough for you. And that was how we started Enscape.
Yeah. Well, how and why did you come across like architecture visualization? Like, was this something, obviously you said your wife is in the architecture space. I guess you guys would have been using it for, you know, product engineering. Were you using visualization and that's where it came across? And architects are like one of the, you know, most, I guess they're one of the biggest industries that you use in space. So like, how did you focus in on architecture visualization?
I think Thomas described it nicely before, that he's more the artist guy of the two of us. And so he had a knack for this, had been programming the engine. Maybe Thomas, you want to jump in? Since he was, don't know, 15
years sure.
old.
Yeah, sure. I mean, everybody knows probably if I describe the user interface of rendering tools, at least from 10 years ago, and where you have a huge amount of sliders and checkboxes and so on. And I always felt that it's super hard to get even the most basic shots out of the common rendering tools back then. And
I you bring back flashbacks of just trying to get a normal sun to work.
Exactly. And you always feel like, am I too stupid to correctly adjust all these hundreds of settings? And that was the moment where we thought, okay, the average architect only needs a subset of these settings, because it's usually you don't want to photograph your building on Mars or on some kind of strange fantasy planet. It's always the Earth. It's always the sun, and the starting point is usually real world correct settings and not some artificially tweaked artistic image. And then let's go from there and tweak it where it's necessary. So this was the initial vision. A few months and years later, Enscape also developed a bunch of settings, but I think they're still very easy to understand, and you know when you have to touch them. So that was the idea, and the initiative to really start developing it was when we tried to sell a visualization project, which took a couple of weeks to months. And costs usually $30,000 if you want your CAD project visualized in a real-time gaming engine on a very high quality level. And we tried to sell that to an architect back then in Munich somewhere. Yeah, and they told us that's, in theory, it's a good thing if you want to showcase your project to a customer in VR, but it's completely unrealistic to pay these huge amounts of money and then have super long iteration times. And we're talking about days or weeks if you outsource that to an agency who recreates your CAD file in Unity or Unreal Engine and so on. Well, and then they came up with the idea, I mean, guys, if you could integrate that into our CAD, that would be awesome. Then we could use it. And we thought, okay, that's really a smart idea. So let's look at the market. And we figured out, okay, there's no such thing, then let's start just developing it.
So you make it sound so easy. It's just, let's just make a game-changing visualization software. And then, I mean, from there, you guys have taken the architecture industry by storm. I think, like, I joined Big maybe almost 3.5-4 years ago now. And I think we were just kind of testing it, and a few people were adopting it. And I think there's a ratio of maybe 10% was using Enscape at the beginning, and then we were using, you know, our traditional rendering platform. And then within 2 years, that had basically inverted to the point where like 90% of stuff was done with Enscape. And, you know, I think a few of the things that you talked about is like some of the things I keep, because obviously in the office and, you know, testing new tools and technologies, I think there's always like the one, exactly what you said, like, you know, how integrated is it into our existing, you know, CAD platforms, whether that's Revit or Rhino and et cetera, et cetera. And I think the beauty of Enscape is it's so simple. You literally click a button and the things import, and you're now in the environment, and that's it. Like, even with other, you know, it doesn't have to be a viz thing, but other kind of tools we use, there's always like some kind of import methodology, and you got to export in some specific file. And even that small couple steps, it creates a bit of a barrier for people to adopt it quickly. So whenever I seem to be talking to like tech companies in the AEC space, I'm just like, check out Enscape, because I think you guys nailed that, making it so accessible and so quick and easy to just jump in there and, oh wow, I'm in a daylighted world. I don't have to spend like an hour to turn the sun on like you used to have to do. So was that like, and I know you guys, or correct me if I'm wrong, you guys built the kind of engine from scratch, as opposed to using an existing game engine like Unreal or Unity and things like that?
Yeah, that's again one for Thomas. And you said it was like, we took the whole AEC industry so fast, it didn't feel like it going through it, yeah. To be honest. If you sold your first license and then no one buys your product for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then the second person buys, that doesn't feel like you're doing immensely well. Even you think you have it nailed and you have a great product, but it yeah, there are really moments when it doesn't feel like it going through.
Looking but fortunately, back, it accelerated a bit from one license every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fortunately, yeah. After that, it took off. But in the first days, wow, that was tough. But yeah, after that, it took off. It took off. But yeah, you have to go through this period.
Yeah, and I feel we definitely appreciate that, because people keep saying that ATN is growing really fast, but for us, I feel it's just like, yeah, we're in the one or two subscriptions a day kind of a week kind of phase, as you describe. So I guess it's always from like the outside perspective, it's just, it seemed to just grow so fast.
Yeah, but then looking back and then looking ahead a little bit, when we had a still better product, because we also entered the market quite early with a product that wasn't quite there, but that way we were able to get some great feedback early on from you guys and from people who now work at Big, used to be at Foster's. And yeah, we got great feedback. And that way, I think the product progressed a lot faster than if we would have waited until we could have shipped the perfect product. And yeah, afterwards, it turned out very well. And the other question, you mentioned that we did create our own rendering engine. And that was also what I mentioned before, what Thomas had been working on as his hobby project for a while before, and then we turned it into a real product. But maybe Thomas, you can also say some words to that.
Yeah, it's always tempting from an outside perspective to come to the conclusion that that you could simply take the 3D rendering technology from a game and put it into the AEC world, and it should work immediately, because why shouldn't it? I mean, it's all polygons and computer graphics. But if you look closely, the requirements are really dramatically different.
Yeah.
And I think there's a process of convergence going on here, but especially in the last couple of years, the difference was even more heavy, that for games, the restrictions that you come up with, if you allow these kinds of dynamic content that you need for a game, and in turn you don't, or in contrast, you don't need them for AC at all, they come at a cost, these kind of requirements, let's say. And simply by cutting that away, we could take some design decisions from software perspective, and to make the AEC use case much more effective in Enscape, and focus on the light transport and so on, which again is for games not as important as it is for AEC. Yeah, and that's like why animations. We adopted to this real-time ray tracing very early on.
You can make an example so people understand it better if they're not from the field. So, for example, explosions and animations, to the extent that you need them in computer games, aren't really for architectural visualizations.
Yeah. I mean, it would be cool. You could blow up your building. If that'd be quite fun for like a student crit, and then the crit. I actually did that in the university. I put my we put our projects into Unreal, and then of course it has a gun by default, so our tutor was just walking around like shooting our buildings away the designs that he didn't like really. But yeah, turn it into crit mode and you can just like smash the buildings up or something. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, that's there's a funny anecdote. At one time, I don't know why we did that, but at one time we integrated some kind of destruction mode in Enscape. It came some sort of for free because we had all this physics simulation in there, which is actually not needed at all, but it's in there for some historic reason, and you could disintegrate the whole building and it looked totally funny. But we decided that it's probably, most people don't want to see their building explode. But yeah, maybe it would have been interesting for April's Fool joke, but it never, it was never released.
See, you need to add these Easter eggs and the little Dr. Photon and exploding buildings. That would be very cool.
Yeah, let's see.
Maybe we were a little boring at the time, but we thought maybe people value it more if you actually help them instead of building Easter eggs.
yeah, true.
By the way, speaking about animations, I know there's been a lot of sort of progress and updates with Enscape. One thing I love is the sort of animated grass and trees that you have. I heard there's supposed to be some animated people coming soon. Is there any word on that? Any updates you can give us on that?
No, because we're not in charge anymore. So we don't have an active role in the company since I think 1 or 2 years. So
maybe we can give you a little more insight into the history of Enscape and where we're at right now.
We're not quite there on the timeline yet, but yeah, we'll get to you guys moving to future endeavors. But I'm sure you've got some tidbits for what's coming on Enscape, but we'll come back to that for sure. But yeah, just to touch on that, was the like seamlessness of Enscape and building your own engine and all that kind of stuff, was that something that was very it was very conscious at the beginning to try and do that, or was it kind of like a byproduct of you decided to make your own engine, and by doing that it also the importing process is much more seamless and et cetera. Was that something you really kind of focused in on, the seamlessness? Because I think that's what makes Enscape or one of the many things that makes Enscape like the kind of front runner in this real-time renderings era.
We tried to nail the many decisions, and we had discussions about many decisions. For example, how should we do the integration, and also about, and then we tried to get the rendering quality right, which was also very controversial during the first iteration of the real-time ray tracing at the back in the day. But yeah, the integration was of course the part that was also from our first conversation, as Thomas said, in this architectural office, that was from the start the initial plan, that it needs to be very, very well integrated into the current workflow.
Yeah.
Even then.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's interesting about going out and creating your own engine. I feel like a lot of people, you know, wouldn't have even considered that, because you have, you know, you can draft off the back of Unreal or Unity or, you know, whichever one. So I think that was a tough decision, but like obviously that was the thing that really paid off.
Well, yeah, you know, it's not like we thought we have to do it, but we always looked at the alternatives that were there at the time and that are there now. And then you try to get to the best conclusion of what route we should go. So you need to have a good understanding of what's out there and what's possible, and then which is the best way for you to go. Is it realistic for you to create your own rendering engine, or is it better to go with what's already there, seeing all the limitations that this approach has? And that's how we decided to go for it. And also, same goes for which software to start. You know, it wasn't that we supported all the softwares from the start, but initially we started with Revit, which turned out to be a very good idea looking back. But back in the day, it was also a tough decision. Could have been SketchUp. Could have been, because we are from Germany, it could have been ARCHICAD or Altplan even at the time. But from the start, we looked at how can we bring the most benefit to the most people worldwide. And if you look worldwide, then Revit was the tool to go.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the era of real-time rendering and what Enscape delivers is, and what I keep, like, you know, raving about Enscape is, like, you know, you're not just talking about images. If there's anyone in the crowd that have not used Enscape, it's like, you know, walking around a video game. And I think there's also a lot of design benefits of having that. You see, we find ourselves discovering views rather than, you know, obviously there's a lot that you like prescribe in, you know, this corner of the building or something, but there's also a lot where you discover the actual a view that you may not have thought about because you're kind of walking around exploring it. But then also that once you've kind of set the model up, it's not just images, it's images, animations. I swear the QR code panoramic thing is the most underrated feature in Enscape. I keep showing teams that in the office, and like it has the biggest wow factor. And honestly, I owe you guys a big thanks or a few beers, because like people think it's incredible and they're like, oh my god, how do you do this? I'm like, can you teach me? I'm like, yeah, click this button and then click this button and save the QR code. So you know, like it's you know, VR, and I call it the pseudo VR for your phone. I think you've really helped you know, amplify our communication ability as architects, or it's a much higher bandwidth of communication for architects. And also as an architect, like, you know, I use Enscape for my own little ideas and competitions and stuff. And I think it's so much easier to now have that viz kind of ability back in your hands rather than having, you know, a third party visualization person that kind of tries to recreate your vision, or like it's your design through their eyes. So I think that was like, you know, that's my little pitch to everyone to use Enscape. And, you know, it was from, like I said, within 2 years, I think the majority of products in at least New York and here in London we use it. Majority come out of Inkscape is like the majority of our projects, I think, at this point. So yeah, it's were you guys kind of now with the introduction of, I feel like the video game world is becoming more and more ingrained in architecture. It's creeping over into the architecture space with Unreal and Unity are becoming more and more used by architects. Was that something you guys were kind of well, obviously very conscious of, but do you feel like there's a we're gonna see more and more architects in video game spaces and engines and things like that? Or do you see it more as like just architects using the tools that we have available to us? If that makes sense as a question.
It makes sense as a question. I'm not sure we can give a good answer to it because we are not architects, and so we can only say what we see. So,
Well, you must know your clientele quite well at this point, would you say, or no?
I would say we know them quite well, and I think the reason why people use it is because there's still some functionality that you can get out of these game engines that you can't get from any other tool any simpler. And
Yeah.
so that's why you use the tool. And I mean it's pretty good for that. So I would think if it's helpful in communicating your design to a client, and it gets easier and easier to do it this way. And the people demand it more and more because they know about the functionalities, then I would think that the tendency is to have it more and more. But yeah, maybe you can also get there with easier tools. So it really, to me, depends on how do you get to the result the easiest. And if there's a better way, then maybe that better way will come. Or if it's still the game engines, you'll use the game engines.
Was there ever thought or like I'm kind of skipping forwards a little bit, but how do you guys feel, or was there ever a thought, like let's even say 3 or 4 years ago when you guys were kind of, I guess, in the thick of the Enscape rise of, creating a link or a gateway to metaverses and or discussions around metaverses. Obviously, it's almost like a cliche term now and topic for the AEC space. But was there ever talk of Enscape becoming a, I guess you could argue Enscape is also a little as a metaverse, but was there any discussions of kind of the words metaverse and linking Enscape with game engines that metaverses use and things like that?
We briefly touched on it, whether you call it metaverse or omniverse or whatever word that is out there. But we, for the moment being, we concluded that it wasn't worthwhile following that path. Maybe that will change in the future, but
I
when
feel weird.
we're still in charge, we decided against it.
Yeah,
And
I feel like we're in that hype era of the metaverse. Like everyone's super excited about it. They don't really know why they're going to use it, or like what exactly they're going to build in it, or what the metaverse is going to, the purpose of it is. But everyone's
right.
excited about it,
Yeah,
right?
everyone was excited about Second Life, which was maybe
Yeah,
also a
the first metaverse,
metaverse,
right?
the first metaverse. And
Yeah.
so yeah, it remains to be seen. Also, everyone was very excited about VR. And maybe to give the question back to you, how often do you actually use VR nowadays?
I mean, not that much. I'm not spending a whole bunch of my time in VR. We're building, of course, every office has a VR room and stuff. But yeah, I do know what you mean. I think less. I don't know if it's part of like a Zoom burnout as well, that maybe people are now kind of back in the offices and things like that. They're a little bit, Zoom and screen tired, so to speak, and VR is just kind of like a big extension of that. But at the same time, I think there's some things on the horizon where, I mean, we definitely use VR for presentations and things like that, and occasionally we'll use it during the design process to explore things. But I think it's that cutoff of putting a headset on and you're no longer, connected to the world around you, and in a meeting and stuff like that, that's a tricky one, unless you have a massive screen and people are watching. But I think it will kind of swing back when the technology develops a little bit more. I think we've also been experimenting with augmented reality and the HoloLens and things like that. And again, which is like, people are kind of mind blown when they first see it. But then will it be adopted into the design process? It's kind of sporadic. But I think maybe the moment when, like, Apple, for example, comes out and your normal pair of glasses can do AR and VR, and it's not so much of a like hassle to like set up some sensors and put a goggles on and this kind of stuff. I think maybe we'll see AR and VR kind of have a second spurt of life, I think. I don't
Yeah,
know if
I completely agree with you. I think that's, at the moment, that's the biggest sort of hesitation people have in terms of onboarding to XR, using VR goggles, because it's too immersive at the moment. People don't want to completely leave physical reality. People want to be in this sort of intermediate reality, sort of like whether it's AR filters into the VR world or AR filters into the physical world. People want to be in that intermediate phase and sort of switch in and out as they will. And VR goggles are just way too immersive. And the thing is that the sort of what it takes to get them, the payoff isn't worth it. So whether it's the price, the sort of having to put on these big headsets, having to completely disconnect from the real world, the payoff isn't worth it. The only things right now that are super functional in VR seem to be games. And like, so the functionality isn't quite there yet. But I think by the time we have AR goggles or some sort of smart glasses and functionalities that match that, perhaps we're gonna have, a lot more people sort of onboarding into the metaverse. And I think in terms of like Enscape, it would be really cool to see use cases where architects can design buildings and perhaps deploy them completely or directly from Enscape without having to go through a third-party platform. So for example, being able to like drill boundaries around the building and where sort of avatars can walk into or walk on, and some functionalities and GUI systems. Like that would be really cool to have in Enscape, and perhaps you wouldn't need Unreal Engine then, or Twinmotion, or Unity. You could just do everything from Enscape. That'd be super cool.
That'd be super cool, yes. And maybe I will build something in that way, or Enscape will build something in that way soon. We'll see. But for the moment being, I think it's unrealistic. To do it all.
That's the thing, is I guess that is a really that is a really great point, because I think another underrated skill set of entrepreneurs like yourselves is actually not doing too much, right? And not trying to do everything at once.
Oh,
That's a
that's the
difficult.
hardest thing. It's where do you stop? Because you get so many requests and so many great ideas, but where do you stop? What's really the essence of it? What's really necessary, and what can you do without? That's really the tricky question. And this is so hard to get right, because I mean, even now with the current CAD systems, you're so overwhelmed that it takes months for you to learn the software. And also Enscape gets more and more functionality. And so it's really hard to maintain this level where you feel it's a tool that's very intuitive and very easy to use, and nonetheless it can do what you want it to do. And so getting the balance right between having what's needed but don't doing anything else, even though you have a million people shouting at you that you should do something else. That's the tricky bit.
That's a skill, I think, in itself, and that's
By the way,
it's a
sp Speaking about sort of being entrepreneurial, there's a question from the audience that says, thanks for sharing this fascinating unheard story. What's your future entrepreneurial goal after Enscape? Maybe something extraterrestrial.
Extraterrestrial.
You can tell us some of your visions about the future.
Or well, I think that kind of brings us to the next part of the story, right? That Enscape is you know, doing super well. And, you know, I think it was like a year or two ago, you guys decided to kind of step away from Enscape a little bit. Do you want to tell us that part of the story? And
sure.
And then obviously we'll move on to like, what are you doing now?
Sure. So maybe let's start a little earlier, because the next step was 2017. So the company is doing well. It started off 2015 by selling one license, then nothing for some weeks, and then it started to take off a little better. And so in 2017, we founded it out as a separate entity, and since then, I think it did very well. We hit break even. Company did amazing. And then another 2 years later, back in 2019, was when we were at the point where we decided to step out operationally and step into the board role. Nonetheless, the company was doing very, very well. But we felt that we could also do with a little change in how we run the company. You know, in a company's life, every now and then you get to the next growth level and to the next size of the company, and then you need to change how it's running. Then you need a middle layer of management, and so that was when we decided to change the way we operate the company and to step back to the board. And also some early investors left the company. We sold also some shares of ours. That was back in 2019, and now just a couple of weeks ago, 2021, we had the big merger with Chaos.
Yeah. So how at 2019, like how big is Enscape? Like how many people work at Enscape, for example?
That's a good question. 2019, it was like 40, I guess.
40, so I mean, 40, that's
50,
a good size.
50-ish, yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, just purely from a entrepreneur's journey and moving from the kind of day-to-day role to, like, the boardroom, was that something that was easy for you guys to do, or did you kind of feel like you wanted to be back in the trenches, so to speak, of everything going on? Or was that like a easy transition for you guys, or like a natural transition?
It, you know, it's always good. It's easy to let go if things go well, and it's not so easy if things don't go well.
Yeah.
And I think it's the nature of every entrepreneur that you always focus on where things don't go well, and then you try to fix that. And so that's also what we did back then. So some of it operationally, some of it strategically, we still wanted to the company to prosper and then see what we can do, and also what role we need to fill in to make the company the most successful it can be. That was always our question: how can we make the company become the most successful company it can be?
Yeah.
And so it was also a different role. It was more argument than we had before, I guess. But it's good. I mean, you need to have some conflict to get something out of it. It's what Thomas and I typically had in the years before, where we had our tough conversations.
Yeah. So you guys transitioned in. So that was after 2019. So 2020, you guys kind of transitioned to the board side of things.
Exactly. So second half year of 2020.
The beginning of the pandemic, essentially.
Yeah. So that was also for us personally, it was also a move during the pandemic, but we also both became fathers. So it was also from our personal lives. It was also a good moment in time. good timing. So being at home and having a little kid is quite okay.
Yeah, that's not a bad timing, or given what's going on in the rest of the world at that time.
Exactly. So it didn't hit us as hard as it hit others, because we were home with our newly born kids. Which is
did
also
you,
quite
did
nice. And
Enscape did Enscape kind of benefit from the pandemic? I mean, obviously it's not like a it doesn't have a Zoom style function of meeting in there and things like that, but did you see like an uptick during the pandemic? I guess there was more architects. I don't know, maybe it was because you're working from home, it's a little bit more accessible maybe than your traditional kind of visualization platforms.
So there were several during the pandemic, I would say there were several phases. And the first phase was insecurity, where no one knew what was coming and what it was all about. And these were, I think, the first 3, 4, 5 months of the pandemic, where Enscape sales were also flatter than they used to be before. Because I would just think it was just some insecurity. No one knew what was coming, and so everyone was very cautious. But after that, it normalized. So would I say that Enscape benefited? I'm not so sure, but I also think it wasn't really affected by the pandemic. So it neither was it a winner nor was it a loser of the pandemic. It was
Which
just
again, not a bad thing.
not a bad thing, yeah. You know,
Looks like we also lost Thomas. Maybe he'll come back, but
I think
that's
he only had a certain amount of time, so I
Oh,
guess that
right. No problem.
he's gone now. So we
So,
will continue without him.
So then you guys kind of jumped off, and now you have gone from a founder to well, you're still a founder, but you're now kind of more on the investment side of things, right? You could say you're an investor, right?
Now, after we moved to the board, we had some funds. As I said, we also sold some shares. We were still large shareholders, but we had sold some shares. And then you have some funds that you can also do some investing. But that
Because
was.
I always wonder that as like a an entrepreneur and someone that's founded a company, it's extremely hard to do and it's a lot of hard work. And then when you do get to a level and it's successful, there's a point where you can exit and then you just kind of like well, living a dream and sitting on a beach with your Mai Tai and relaxing. Did you have a little bit of time
Is that
to
the
kind
image
of
that you have of an entrepreneur?
Well, like at the end goal, right? They say that, right, an entrepreneur is or like a founder is just trying to get back to life before you started the company, but the company's been successful. Like you're not working like too crazy and life is good. And but then I think it's also a challenge of I think that's a really hard thing to do because I think you want to do something else or start something else, which is kind of what you've gone on to do, right?
So there is a lot of aspects to this question. So the first thing, maybe, do I see myself sitting at a beach right now, even
Or
though I
did
maybe
like
could?
did you take some time to maybe travel and relax after this like incredible but hard-working journey?
So you see, right after we had a little more time, COVID hit, and traveling was tricky.
Was tricky,
So traveling wasn't really possible, even though we would have had some time and some means to travel. Then you have a lockdown and you can't travel. So nope, we haven't done much traveling since then. We have done some traveling, but not a real lot. Not like we were sitting on the beach for half a year. And then we both had kids, and that's, I think, something that is very nice.